The Creative Music Guild, Merrillhurst University, and KBOO Community Radio are proud sponsors of a weekend residency by Mark Rabeau, May 8th and 9th at Merrillhurst University. Renowned guitarist and composer Mark Rabeau will perform a solo concert on Friday, May 8th at 8 p.m. and will lead a workshop on group-free improvisation on Saturday, May 9th from 2 to 5. The workshop is open to musicians of any experience level, and all instruments are welcome. Both events are taking place at the St. Anne's Church on the Merrillhurst campus, 17600 Pacific Highway, which is Highway 43. More information about the May 8th and 9th events featuring Mark Rabeau can be found on kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
All right, it is just about 9 a.m., you are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up on KBOO Press Watch, Teresa Mitchell looks at anti-transgender initiative in California, U.S. warships on the move, and more. Right after this.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com. This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. A beautiful dawn here in Portland. And as I watched the sun peek over Y-East, I did wonder... if maybe today, in some way, the 5 centuries of the torture of the descendants of West Africa on this continent might be reaching some turning point. Is that possible? Could the masses of people finally decide that there really is something to be done about mass incarceration and mass murder of the black man in America? Can white people decide that? It doesn't seem like it. Every day it seems that maybe the turning point could be reached when a people could somehow say, we see that the black men are murdered. There's murder going on. Look at that. We will cease to murder. Every night passes with lies and blandishments, and the murders continue. How can this be? How could I explain this to someone 20 years from now? How could I explain this to someone on the other side of the earth? What sort of bizarre madness is this? As I wrote this, I heard a police siren, and I heard the roar of a powerful cruiser engine down Foster Road. Such a familiar sound. Twice I myself, you know, once 30 and more years ago, and once less than 10 years ago, I have faced this society's bloody-handed insistence on mindless obedience. Twice the police have grabbed their guns in anger at me. I've looked right down the barrel of police guns, and twice I have been spared death. Only for having a white face, my pale, mostly Irish face. How ironic is that, if you know history? I cannot be silent. It seems that fate insists that I cannot be silent. Meanwhile, the lies become more and more blatant, as is often the case when a murderer is confronted in court. We don't know how that happened to Freddie Gray. That's what the pundits say with serious faces. Really? We don't know? Is that the way to frame it? Is that the way to frame it, CNN? NPR? Can we stop saying that damn stuff? Imperialism begins at home. The severing and crushing of an unarmed innocent man's spine in police custody has everything to do with the aircraft carriers and ships bristling with arms by the Red Sea today. The intent is the same. It's absolute domination of the world by force and threat and violence and lies. There is no possible end to this threat because it is not in any way rational. It is the multiplied and spawning expression of the rule of elites, of the rule by people who never knew their mother's love and only have a list of vaguely remembered East Coast nannies who have replaced love, people who have replaced love of family with love of weapons and domination and rule. They rule us. Today, right now, we are ruled. You are ruled. To us, they say, look to the flag and do as you're told. They say, down with the war. Down with the war on the world. And down with the war on black men. And down with the war on everyone who's not a billionaire heir. Down with the war on drugs, which is a civil war, a Jim Crow war. Down with the war on everyone. Down with the billionaire white rule. Down with the war. To specifics. Today, an aircraft carrier flotilla capable of wiping out an entire nation is blocking the entrance to the Red Sea. Intimations arrive in the press that they will confront Iranian ships already underway to keep them from their destination. This is an act of war. Last night, the corporate radio news was full of lies about North Korea, citing a nameless Chinese source who suddenly claimed that North Korea has not one or two, but 20 nuclear weapons at the ready, and the same articles say could be mounted on an international or an intercontinental ballistic missile. This is war propaganda. This is a lie. North Korea can barely get 5 kilotons out of an explosion. They do this because they don't know, well, to be more specific, because they don't know how to focus the blast and how to reflect the neutrons. They had to create a mine and create a huge mass of material to create a nuclear explosion. They did it, but they certainly aren't going to mount it on one of their moldering 60s missiles, no matter how they rejigger them. I mean, they've tried to put something the size of a softball in near orbit, and they couldn't do it. It's a lie. It's war propaganda. There's no threat from North Korean nuclear weapons, for God's sake. I mean, the most they could do is have nukes available to wipe out armies that attack them on the field. For that, it could be useful. People in eastern Ukraine are being slaughtered by artillery and aircraft bombings. And they have gone out and captured the artillery that has blown up their cities. And they have turned it against western Ukraine, against the Maidan. And the news, to the extent that it comes here at all, is that instead there is somehow a never verifiable Russian invasion. Meanwhile, the U.S. arms and soldiers continue to encircle the region. Meanwhile, unbelievably, we give the very substantial Nazi factions in Ukraine arms. It seems that war is growing, massing supplies, building up lies, but there is a source of that war and is right here in the U.S. We hear in the news that Saudi Arabia has attacked Yemen all this month, the incredibly rich attacking the incredibly poor. The Wall Street Journal says, by sustaining nearly a month of intensive airstrikes in Yemen, Saudi Arabia has shown that from a purely military standpoint, it can lead a lengthy and complicated campaign. It's still far from clear that Riyadh will achieve its ultimate goal of rolling back the pro-Iranian Houthi forces that have taken over much of Yemen, end quote. Note the tone. As if Saudi Arabia was or even could act alone, as if Saudi Arabia were not a massive arms depot for the Pentagon suppliers. A monster of a state, a horrific, theocratic monstrosity that we supply at a discount, as if the Houthi faction were of the same denomination of Shia as the Iranian Ayatollahs, which they certainly are not. Or read the New York Times pushing the story that the Obama administration had been pressuring the Saudis to stop bombing for humanitarian reasons, as if the bombing had not been arranged by the Pentagon to destroy the remaining anti-ship missiles at the mouth of the Red Sea. What's that about? That's about confronting Iran. As if the Obama administration gave a damn about the Yemeni people when they wouldn't even evacuate Americans out of Yemen. Americans in Yemen had to board Russian ships to get out of the bombing area. Or how about this New York Times tweak? Quoting again, sales of U.S. arms, this is a headline, sales of U.S. arms fuels the wars of Arab states, end quote. as if U.S. satellites did not guide the jets. And we're supposed to believe that years of negotiation with Iran were really about peace instead of a lengthy cover for war preparations. The war preparations are manifest. The peace is not. It's just a fact. Quoting Eric Dreitzer in Global Research, it has become a popular position, both in the mainstream and the pseudo-alternative media and those on the Russophobic left, to downplay the significant fascist influence on the political and military institutions, as well as the cultural character of the new Ukraine. Quite often the reality of Ukrainian fascism is obscured by vague assertions that such conclusions are merely Russian propaganda, that they are simply Kremlin talking points, and not statements of objective reality. Indeed, influential political figures such as the ever-hilarious John McCain and Jen Psaki, and global media brands like The Guardian and Fox have all rushed to the nearest camera or Twitter account to proclaim that Ukraine is free and that we should stand united with it. Carefully embedded in these pleas is the notion that Ukraine is democratic and that whatever ultra-nationalist coded language for fascists and Nazis exists are merely a marginal influence at best. Such vacuous statements, Eric Dreitzer writes, belie the inescapable fact that Nazis make up an important strata of both the political and military establishment. Moreover, they are intended to provide cover for U.S. policy, which provides these elements with the support they need to both influence the political development of the country and prosecute its illegal war, against the people of Donetsk and Luhansk. And at issue is not whether everyone in Ukraine is a Nazi. That is an absurd argument that no one is really making. Rather, the question has to do with precisely which individuals and factions that are unmistakably fascist are being supported directly or indirectly by the U.S. and its allies. More to the point, which of the U.S.-backed Nazi elements, I guess U.S.-baked is even better, are integral to the continued illegal war against the East, and which figure prominently in the future trajectory of the Ukrainian state. The war in Ukraine is being prosecuted by the U.S.-backed government in Kyiv, using all available means, while of course the regular Ukrainian military forces, also armed and trained by the U.S., are fighting this war alongside them and in concert with them, are outright Nazi elements who, like their regular army brethren, are receiving direct support from Washington. Here's a quote from Associated Press. From March 31st, the United States plans to send soldiers to Ukraine in April for training exercises with units of the country's National Guard. The units to be trained include the Azov Battalion, a volunteer force that has attracted criticism for its far-right sentiments, including brandishing an emblem widely used in Nazi Germany, end quote. And Eric Dreitzer writes, of course, first and foremost is the fact that the U.S. military would be on the ground in Ukraine providing direct support for the Ukrainian military. Isn't that precisely what Washington accuses Russia of doing while failing to provide evidence, namely providing direct military support on the ground? But leaving aside such pesky questions, he writes, as to hypocrisy and accountability, there is an even more salient point. The language employed in the Associated Press article essentially whitewashes the true nature of the Azov Battalion, who they are and what they stand for. And he goes on to point out that they are simply very clearly and explicitly Nazis, and they intend to wipe out anyone who isn't white and Ukrainian and whatever it is that they define as superior there in Ukraine. And you can find that article at globalresearch.ca. Much more to that article. Much, much more. And time is 9:12. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. I say down with the war. What do you say? Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I had intended today, and I published on the KBOO.fm website, that I was going to talk about the anti-transgender backlash, and which is definitely happening. But I would say that war is brewing today, as it is not in a while. Not that it isn't ever brewing with the United States, but my God, it's just plain scary. And the USS Roosevelt and the USS Normandy and dozens of other ships, we're really talking about a flotilla, are at the Strait of, oh my God, I forgot the name of the strait. They're at the mouth of the Red Sea. Maghreb, perhaps? State of, oh, okay, never mind. I'll look it up. But if you go to your mental map of the Middle East, you need to go to the west and to the north a bit, to the right and up on your map, to find the Persian Gulf. where there have been so many confrontations. And this is against, this is about preventing Iran from providing any reinforcement to anti-ship missiles and to any effort to defend their positions there, as they are surrounded by U.S. military emplacements. And it is not about restoring democracy to Yemen. That has just as much truth as restoring democracy to Vietnam and restoring democracy to Iraq. There's no reason to believe that stuff. But I do want to mention, at least, that there is a backlash right now, and there's a danger to it, because we are approaching a presidential election. And in presidential elections in the United States, the tone for the next several years tends to be set from our rulers. And it would be very handy. I can see that it would be quite useful for our rulers to arrange for a backlash so that they can get their enthusiastic support. And they really do get enthusiastic support from right-wing elements in the United States who feel very oppressed. They're not oppressed, but they feel oppressed. From white evangelicals, frankly, who are very handy as shock troops. And one way to do that would be to just turn everything around in terms of GLBT rights. I don't believe for a minute that the Obama administration has advanced GLBT rights out of compassion. It's a interesting political maneuver. I'm glad that it benefits me. Sure, there are people, and maybe Obama himself feels compassion for GLBT people. I don't know. It doesn't matter, because that's not how we are ruled. You don't actually get to elect a president, and you don't actually get to move your agenda, because if that were true, we would not be at war constantly, because the American people don't really want war. So I will mention that Chris Hayashi at Trans Law Center has put out an article about the anti-trans law proposed, the ballot initiative in California. She writes, on Friday, anti-equality activists proposed a ballot initiative that would require Californians to prove their gender before using the bathroom. I'm not even making this up. She writes, the initiative is clearly intended to target transgender people, which is itself illegal, but which, in effect, it would place everyone at greater risk of harassment. Anyone who doesn't meet stereotypes of what a woman looks like or what a man looks like, or really anyone a building manager or someone else with power wanted to harass, could be singled out to somehow prove their gender before using the bathroom. This initiative, she writes, is an attack on privacy, with no safeguards around who would have power to question people's gender or what information or examinations they'd be allowed to collect and perform in order to enforce it. It opens the state up to costly lawsuits, opens all Californians up to harassment and discrimination. And what she doesn't say is that this, the people who are putting it forward have collected hundreds of thousands of signatures before. They have funding. They have media access. This is a real hate measure, and it's going forward in California, so this is part of the backlash. Number to call 503-231-8187, and Francis is on the air. Hello, Francis.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, I appreciate your show. I can remember the first time I peeked into the boys' bathroom in Catholic school, and I looked and I said, it looks like a bathroom. It's like, what's the big deal, you know? And I don't understand the concern myself. There's stalls in the bathrooms. It's very interesting to me that this has become such a political issue. What I wanted to talk about, though, was Freddie Gray, who was just killed. His back was broken.
Yes.
And I agree with you, and I scream at the TV, even the news media, that even MSNBC or whatever, who pretends to be progressive, they're accepting the notion that they don't know what happened to this young man.
Over and over they say that. Over and over. We don't know what happened. Come on.
You can see it on the video. He can't even walk. They're dragging him. And there's even a video of a young person coming up to them and screaming at them, why are you dragging him like that? His leg is hurt. He can't walk.
Which was very brave.
Right. And the media acts like they don't even see it. They can't see what happened to him? He should have been destabilized right then, and a medical emergency team brought there to take him to the hospital. It was clear he had an injury, and they were the policemen were so brutal.
Brutal is the word. It's unbelievably brutal.
To me, is worse than any of the murders that I've seen so far. The brutality that was demonstrated is frightening. That a human being can be treated like that, and the media to pretend that they can't see what is happening is even more frightening.
Oh yeah, and what I'm trying to say is that's how it's done, and that's how we look the other way when we blow up people in Yemen and all around the world.
There's got to be some kind of way for this mad machine of military and prison industrial profits stopped. They got to find another way to make money.
Yeah, the real revolution would just be to listen to our hearts. I mean, to really look at what we're looking at.
Right, but the corporate machine doesn't have a heart. So maybe that's the way we can show that there's something different than a person.
Right on.
All right, you take care.
Thanks for calling in.
Bye-bye.
Well, I want to comment tangentially. As I was saying, I was going to talk about trans rights. All this other stuff is happening. It's just going to have to wait, mostly. But of course, what isn't said and what needs to be said to diffuse the power of the ultra-right when it comes to trans, bathroom rights, the hashtag is we just need to pee. The hashtag doesn't really doesn't tell you how the power is gained. The power is gained from the context of rape, and women fear, rightly, that a man in the bathroom is a threat of rape. And if a transgender woman is a man, then there's a threat of rape. And I don't know of any verified case that trans women have gone into the bathroom to rape women. This pops up in the media every now and then, and if you look, it turns out it was complete crap. I simply cannot, and I've been looking, cannot find a case of a trans woman going into a woman's bathroom to rape. For one thing, well, everything's wrong with that scenario. I mean, everything from surgery to hormones is wrong with that scenario. Although, if the trans population is large enough, there's going to be monsters, among us. Of course there are. But that's the basis of it. That's how it works. And the evangelical right profits in its control of women from the context of patriarchy and rape. Rape enforces patriarchy. And they want that to be the normal. They want that to never be addressed. They want the world to stay that way, for women to always, always, always be afraid. And they would love to transfer that, the anger that naturally comes out of that fear, because it's so wrong for patriarchy to exist in this way, to transgender women. So that's how it works. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. There's so much going on. There's so many things happening. I was listening that, and I heard over the radio, that the Norwegians are moving forward to end broadcast radio, and this is because of the broadcast conditions that they have in Norway. But there have been efforts for a long time to change free radio into something that can be monitored, metered, and something that you can be charged with continually. And this is how it works when you're streaming data and you're listening right now to me or to a radio station. But of course, a lot of you are listening to me with a simple FM receiver. And it really is a very simple device. It's something that you could build yourself with a kit within an hour or so, with never having done it before. And it's not appropriate, of course, but it is capitalistic. But did you know that there's an FM chip inside your smartphone that you're not allowed to use? In an emergency, it would allow you to hear FM radio when the data streaming was down, as was the case with Superstorm Sandy and other disasters. It uses far, far less battery than data streaming, so you could keep your phone on after, well, after the quake that's going to hit Portland. And it costs nothing, so you should be using it all the time to listen to radio with your smartphone if you do it that way. But the smartphone business has it blocked. It's there, but it's deliberately turned off. So go to freeradioonmyphone.org. That's freeradioonmyphone.org to protest, or actually just buy a small actual radio and use it when you want to listen to radio. Instead of using that money-gobbling little snitch in your pocket, you can get a Sony AM-FM radio that will work for months on one battery for about $13. If it's not at the drugstore, they're still available by mail order on the web. Kaido sells little AM-FM pocket radios for about $7. Why shell out data charges? Plus, there's the sheer joy of frustrating the secret police agencies with a media they can't track you with. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. The number to call, 503-231-8187. And Joshua is on the air.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
I just wanted to say thank you very much for speaking on this today, and it's very important. And I also want to reiterate, because there's so few places that I hear my views and what I experienced echoed, thank you. And we are not crazy. We are experiencing the world as it is in reality, and I think that's important to say. And I also just want to say, you know, I think that we get so angry because the media dominant discourse can't explain what we are seeing. But I believe that we dehumanize, just like you are, we dehumanize people. So it's not so much, it's almost like they're not carrying a person there. It's something else. And it's very built into the systems that train them. And then the media and what they are exposed to in their own lives. So it's almost, it's inexcusable, but it's really, they are not. I just watched the documentary Alien Boy recently again, and it's so graphic and horrible to watch. But those officers are carrying like a lump of something. That's what it was like. They're just moving it from the cell to out back out to the car. And is it dying? What is it? It's so, I don't know how else to explain it, but I just wanted to make that comment.
Thanks for bringing that up. And dehumanization, yeah, that's what it's about. I've been thinking about that, and I want to kind of demonstrate, you know, just how easy it is to dehumanize. I mean, we hear that the people in Yemen that were blowing up, they're terrorists, and they're associated with Iran, and what else do they say about them? I don't know. We hear about the Donetsk people, who really are just defending themselves. I mean, if you really look at it, they are just defending themselves, and they're literally defending themselves against Nazis. And they're doing it by stealing their arms, at least in part, stealing the arms of that have been born against them, much as the Vietnamese people had to do during that war. Not entirely. Of course, they got a lot of arms from Russia and China, but they also fought a great deal of their war by stealing the weapons that were brought to bear against them. And we hear that they are associated, you know, they are associated with Russia and that Russia has invaded. You hear these things, excuses. And in the United States, when it comes to incarcerating and murdering black men, we have this list of excuses. And if you want to hear them, just tune into right-wing talk radio, or I bet I could provoke them even from this audience. They're just so ingrained. Their excuses, let me tell you how easy, let me tell you something, that marks me as an American, let me tell you something. Let me tell you how easy it is. I mean, think about it. There's this group of people, they're called, you know, they're far from most of the nation, far from most of America, and they're called Oregonians. And have you heard about Oregonians? They tolerated this compound in their state that was run by a religious fanatic who poisoned salads. That's what Oregonians are like. And Oregonians, have you heard about the Oregonian who murdered men on her farm and fed them to her pigs? That's what Oregonians are like. Have you ever heard about Oregonians? A lot of them are atheists. They don't attend church. That's what Oregonians are like. They're bad. They're so bad. There's communists. There's communists in Oregon. There's terrorists in Oregon. There's terrorists that attack people for wearing fur. It's been called Little Beirut because people, that's what Oregonians are like. You know, they're so confrontational. They're all bad, those Oregonians. Now that If a campaign were brought forth in Washington like that, it would fly just fine because that's how it works. You just demonize the target population, and then all of America is ready to flap their flag back and forth as the jets come over Portland and drop the cluster bombs and the white phosphorus, and we scream and die and turn into a smoking, lightless hovel full of death and desperation. That's how it works. That's how it works. That's how easy it is. And that's what a lie it is for every place that we are being conscripted to fight. That's how it works for every place. That's how it works for all these people that you and I don't actually have a fight with. We're just brought in with the momentum of the USS Titanic here as it makes war on the world. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. We give in to billionaires constantly, not just on war. We won't even let our workers alone. When corporations come in here and they want to suck up the Bull Run water, well, we'll make tax breaks for them. No questions asked. Okay, that's a bit of an exaggeration. But that knee-jerk response for billionaires is still, it's definitely here in Portland. And there's an article, I never thought that I would do this, but I'm going to quote the Portland City Council member Amanda Fritz, who wrote an article for the Oregonian about the Uber takeover. And she writes, "For decades, the city of Portland has regulated private-for-hire transportation services. Taxicab permits have been linked to supply and demand to ensure both that Portlanders needing a ride to the pharmacy or the airport at 3 a.m. can get cab service, and that professionals, say full-time drivers, can earn a living wage to support their families." And she writes, "Set prices and mandatory 24/7, 365 service, coupled with city permitting requiring background checks, safe